Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Hello, welcome to a Six String Hayride podcast, a journey through the world of classic country music with your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. We will be covering all of the great topics in country music, from mama to prison, to dancing, to drinking, to guitar picking, to all the crazy deal with the devil, honky-tonking stuff you do on Saturday night, and how you try to get it past your Lord on Sunday morning. So climb aboard the cart and let's go.
Welcome back, listeners, to the next Six String Hayride album review episode.
Have a round and remember things we did that weren't so tender. Let the train blow the whistle when I go. On my old guitar, sell tickets so someone can finally pick it and tell the girls down at the Ritz I said hello. Had some trouble with my sweetheart's pa. One of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I wrote a letter to my Uncle Fudd, and I rode away on a Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood. There never was a horse like the Tennessee stud. If you're down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes.
Listen to All of the American Recordings by Johnny Cash. We're actually going to review all of the albums in the series. We'll do the four that were done while he was alive. We'll do the box set that came out after his death. And we'll do the two albums that followed a few years later to close out the series. Here to tell you about the first album, Jim O'Malley. Jim, what do you have for the listeners?
The American Recording Series by Johnny Cash, in collaboration with producer Rick Rubin, begins with the first album that comes out in April of 1994. But how does Johnny get to this point where he does an album, his 81st album, and it's just him and the songs and a guitar? There's no backing band. There's no backing instrumentation. It's just the man and the songs and his guitar. In the mid-1980s, so back up about 10 years, and Johnny is being put off of the roster of artists at Columbia Records. He had been with Columbia pretty much the whole time since he had left Sun Records and Sam Phillips. He's at a point where in America, he's doing gigs at county fairs and casinos in the Branson, Missouri type circuit. And it's a bit of a downtime. And it's got to be a little weird for him because it's during this time when his daughter, Roseanne Cash, her career is really taken off. And his stepdaughter, Carlene Carter, is also having a nice run of success at this point. Things kind of start to turn around for Johnny around 1985, 1986, because of his collaboration with a group that becomes known as the Highwaymen. This is Johnny and Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, and Kris Kristofferson.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride.
I was a sailor. I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I was a dam builder. Across a river deep and wide. Where steel and water did collide.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain, and I'll be back again and again and again and again and again and again.
As a quartet, they are selling tickets, they're selling albums, they are filling arenas all over the place. Johnny on his own is not doing it nearly as well. And as a group, and all four of them were having kind of a murky, a little bit of a downturn career-wise in the mid-80s. But when you get all four of them together, then all of a sudden they're selling out arenas and stadiums, and they're selling out Wembley in London, in the UK, and they're playing in Europe. And, that is an incredible lineup, and all of a sudden things are good for them as a group.
And Johnny is approached by a record producer named Rick Rubin, a guy mostly known for doing rap albums and heavy metal albums. And he really felt that Johnny still had something to offer. And he said, you know what? You just need to be Johnny Cash, sitting in a chair, just you and your guitar and your songs. And I'll record you like that and let's see what happens.
When I came off stage, my manager, Lou Robin, came to me and said, there's a man here named Rick Rubin that said he would like to meet you, that has a record company, and he would like to record you. And I said, I don't want to meet him. I told him, bring him back. And so I went back, and there's Rick, and immediately I liked him. Mm-hmm. And I said, so if you had me on your record label, what would you do that nobody else has done? And he said, what I would do is let you sit down before a microphone with your guitar and sing every song you want to record.
All around the water tank, waiting for a train, 1,000 miles away from home, sleeping in the rain. I walked up to a brakeman just to give him a line of talk. He said, if you've got money, I'll see that you don't walk. Well, I haven't got a nickel, not a penny can I show. He said, get off, you railroad bum, and he slammed the boxcar door.
And they formed a really nice creative bond that lasted for the rest of Johnny's life, and they recorded a lot of music together.
Johnny Cash has always been one of the really great and prolific songwriters in American music. I don't care if you call it rockabilly or rock and roll or gospel or country. And he's really all those things. The guy is, he's one of those musicians whose talent just kind of goes beyond any sort of label. Johnny is the first songwriter in country music to take that kind of deeply personal and emotional Hank Williams style, which Hank was doing kind of within gospel ballads and honky tonk type format. And Johnny puts that in a rockabilly setting. So rockabilly kind of gets away from movies and girls and cars and things like that, and going to the drive-in. And Johnny adds a real literary element in the kind of storytelling that happens in these really simple rockabilly beat, 2.5, 3 minute songs. And regardless of the way the 80s are treating him business-wise, I mean, that songwriting power never goes away. So Rick Rubin approaches Johnny Cash and offers him a contract. And he says, "Look, I think you should just, I'll bring recording equipment to your house, or you can come over to my house. Not going to make a big fuss about it. And you just sit down and you play a batch of songs and we'll record them and we'll get them out there." And that first batch is American Recordings from April of 1994. It really is Johnny Cash sitting in a chair with a guitar, a real straightforward recording method. And it's a real amazing collection of songs. There's 13 songs, so you get the Baker's dozen. And it's everything from real traditional, old storytelling like Delia's Gone. And then you get contributions from Kris Kristofferson, from Leonard Cohen.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free.
From Tom Waits, from Nick Lowe.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars. Restless by day and by night, rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me.
And a handful of songs written by Johnny himself. It's recorded right around December of 1993, the weeks leading up to Christmas. And the record comes out in April of 1994. The personnel is one of the easiest ones you're ever going to have to look at for an album. Johnny Cash, guitar, vocals. Rick Rubin, producer.
Something that I find interesting is at first, Cash was very skeptical of the entire discussion of a collaboration with Rick Rubin. Now, he warms up once Rick Rubin promises him a lot of creative control. After spending almost his entire career at Columbia Records, after his initial time on Sun, Johnny had felt kind of kicked to the curb, and he signs with Mercury. He has no creative control for the most part over what comes out, and he doesn't like the results. So eventually, Johnny warms up to the idea, and Johnny and Rick get together to record this first album. Now, Tennessee Stud and The Man Who Couldn't Cry, those are actually recorded at the Viper Room live on December 3rd of 1993.
Back about 18 and 25, I left Tennessee very much alive. I never would have made it through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been riding on a Tennessee stud. Had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw. One of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I wrote a letter to my Uncle Fudd, and I rode away on a Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood. There never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Now, the public's not going to fully embrace his comeback, until the release of American 4 in 2002. But this first effort does win a 1995 Grammy for Best Contemporary Folk Album. So I've been really harsh on things like critics and halls of fames and all of those things, award shows. But I will say there are cases like this when the critics just get it right. You know, the music buying public is not really going to be back out in full force embracing this comeback for several years from this point. But the critics immediately realized how incredible this revitalized Johnny is.
I went up to Memphis and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. She was low down and trifling, and she was cold and mean. Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Delia was, in fact, a real person. Now, I don't know what she was like, but the way she's described in the song with words like low down or trifling or mean, these are all things that in the song portray Delia as somebody who was probably rightly shot down.
So if your woman's devilish, you can let her run. Or you can bring her down and do her like Delia got done. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
As far as the performance of the album itself, it does only make it to number 110 on the Billboard 200 and number 23 on the Top Country Albums, but it does set the tone for what's going to be a very successful return to relevance. While the album does contain a number of Cash originals, there's also quite a few covers on here. Of course, The Beast and Me, written by Johnny's son-in-law, Nick Lowe.
Sometimes it tries to kid me that it's just a teddy bear, and even somehow manage to vanish in the air, and that is when I must beware of the beast in me. That everybody knows. They've seen him out dressed in my clothes, patently unclear if it's New York or New Year.
Why Me, Lord, by Kris Kristofferson. 13 by Glenn Danzig.
Bad luck wind been blowing at my back. I was born to bring trouble to wherever I'm at. Got the number 13 tattooed on my neck. When the ink starts to itch, then the black will turn to red.
A little bit stepping into the musical world that Chris and I know personally. In 1988, British musicians of punk rock and country guys, Mark Riley and John Lankford, put together a tribute record to Johnny Cash called Till Things Are Brighter. It's a bunch of British punk and country musicians doing covers of Johnny's material. He was really happy about the project, you know, gave a big endorsement to it, wound up telling Langford that it was a real morale booster. So, you know, people that love music and other musicians, they know that Johnny is still out there and he's still very capable and very relevant. It's, you know, if you have a bad record company and you're not really in a position to express yourself when you go to make an album that your name's going to be on, you can lose a connection with an audience real quick. And you wind up playing in casinos and county fairs, and you start to lose a chance to connect to a younger audience. This is a real unique thing that Rick Rubin, because of his background, is able to give to Johnny. And because Johnny is put in a position to just sit down and do his thing and tell his stories, that connects with people regardless of age. There was a nice kind of slow momentum building to this moment. And when Rubin and Cash finally meet, both men very quickly figure out how to form a friendship and make the most of this opportunity. And it was going to take a few records for the rest of the world to catch on, but that's always been Johnny, you know, three steps ahead. One of the true masters. Johnny Cash, American Recordings, 1994.
Meet me down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes slow. Meet me down there by the train, 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 down there where the train goes slow.
For some people, small, beautiful events is what life is all about.
Hello, country.
I'd like to remind you to email us at sixstringhayride@yahoo.com. Six is spelled out. You can also search us on Facebook as Six String Hayride. Or what we'd really appreciate you doing is finding us on Patreon under Six String Hayride as well.
Well, folks, thanks again for joining your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley, on the Six String Hayride Classic Country Podcast. We are here for all of your classic country, rockabilly, early rock and roll, little gospel, little blues, a lot of excellent country music-themed recipes. And basically, we are here to keep your musical circle rockin', boppin', and very much unbroken. So thank you for sticking with us. We will see you down the road real soon. And again, whether it's in your home, in your community, wherever it is you do your thing, keep your circle unbroken. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you real soon.
Oh, can the circle be unbroken by and by?
I'm gonna join the family circle at the throne. No, the circle won't be broken by and by, Lord, by and by.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.